The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Get ready for a fascinating journey with a man who lived a double life, a legend in the UFO community, Sergeant Clifford Stone, UFO retrievals and technology. If you want to know what happens when someone is deployed to Ground Zero when a UFO crashes, you don't want to miss this interview. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome to the Veritas Project. I'm your host, Mel Hostelrich. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. If you're looking to get in touch with me, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website. Your thoughts and ideas are always appreciated. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's program.
Specialist Sergeant Clifford Stone was born in Portsmouth, Ohio. At an early age, he has memories of being contacted by extraterrestrials, and that contact continues today. At age 8, he was befriended by an Air Force captain, and that relationship continued through his early adult life. During the Vietnam War, he felt an obligation to enlist in the Air Force, but was rejected due to a skin affliction and classified 4F. He was advised by his friend, the captain, to try the Army, and after a lenient medical examination, he was allowed into the Army as a clerk typist, a job he never had to fulfill. In the world of UFO research, the name of retired Army Sergeant Clifford Stone is nearly a legend. Decorated Vietnam combat veteran who served 22 years, Stone claims that he led a double life from the late 60s through his retirement in 1990. While officially assigned to an NBC team, Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical Retrieval and Abatement Detail, he asserts that he also served on top-secret UFO crash retrieval missions, where he had physical contact with downed ET craft and interactions with captured non-human life forms. The official NBC team assignment allegedly served as a cover for those highly secretive and compartmentalized operations. Over a period of nearly 40 years, Stone has amassed one of the largest private collections of authentic government documents clearly establishing the hard reality of the UFO phenomenon. And directly from Roswell, New Mexico, Sergeant Clifford Stone. Hello, Sergeant Stone, and welcome to the Veritas Show. How are you?
Fine. Thank you kindly, sir.
Thank you for being with us. Sergeant Stone, as many of our loyal listeners know, you recently participated in a fascinating interview on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And if we can start with an open question from that discussion. You mentioned, Sergeant, that you were originally drawn to joining the United States Air Force due to your early childhood friendship with an Air Force officer, but that you were unable to qualify since you had a skin affliction and were given 4F, which has qualified you from service. And for those listening who may not know what 4F means, it means you are not qualified to serve in the armed forces. You can't even enlist or be drafted, and it's very rare. First, can you quickly explain the issues, if you would? What affliction?
Well, it's, you know, a lot of people joke about it. It's called the heartbreak of psoriasis. But if you have psoriasis, there's not really any cure for it. Back then, there was very little treatment for it. And they were concerned that there could be problems in particular assignments that you might be given. Therefore, when I went to Fort Hays for my physical and they found out about it, they immediately went ahead and stated, well, you know, sorry, but you're 4F. So it looked like I wasn't ever going to get in the military.
And it's intriguing. Who was this Air Force officer? Was he a family member, friend, neighbor?
No.
Obviously, go ahead.
Actually, back in 57, I had what I knew close up and personal was a UFO sighting. I had other experiences prior to that, but this was the first time broad daylight, 10 o'clock in the morning, not more than 50, 60 feet in the sky. I saw a UFO, and like I said, up close and personal. I found when I went and told my mom and dad, they just didn't believe it, that it was a flight of fantasy. When I tried to tell other people, I found they didn't believe it. But I took an interest in UFOs. Anyhow, one day we had what was called Kelso's Drugstore on the corner of the block that I lived on, and they had a little newsstand there, and they'd have some UFO publications, things of this sort. They came out with a True Magazine UFO issue. Well, True Magazine being a men's magazine, and I being 8 years old, disregard the fact all it was about was UFOs and nothing else, they refused to sell it to me.
Sure.
An Air Force captain, full uniform, came up to me and he says, "Oh, you have an interest in UFOs?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "So do I." So he went ahead and asked if I liked root beer floats. I remember that well because at that time I was about to mix soda pop and ice cream.
Now, is this in New Mexico or Ohio?
No, sir. This was in Ohio, Portsmouth, Ohio. And that's where I was born and raised for the most part. Anyhow, he went ahead, bought two copies of the magazine, Root Beer Float. Then he wanted to talk about what I had seen. At the time, I didn't even think about how he knew that I had seen anything. But we went to my home after we finished the Root Beer Floats, and he says, "Well, I got to ask your parents if you can have this magazine. If it's yes, you can have it." So we went there. He talked to my mom, and my dad got home. He talked to my dad, and when he started to leave, he gave me the magazine and says, "We're going to talk more about this subject." And I come to find out he knew a whole lot more about me and some of the experiences that I'd had, which for the first time it really felt good because now I had somebody whom I respected as an individual and as well as being in the military that was really listening to what I was saying and not trying to say I was crazy. And we became friends all the way up till 1968, which time he got killed in a crash of a T-33 out of Blackburn Air Force Base.
Obviously, he influenced your interest in service.
I think was, he was meant to do that.
Do you think he was following you?
Oh, I think very much so, sir.
It sounds too coincidental. You're there at a root beer soda shop buying a magazine, and all of a sudden you get somebody so interested in what you had to say. Was he aware of your early childhood experiences with both ETs and invisible visitors?
Oh, yes.
And was this officer really a friend, a mentor, or some sort of controller?
Well, I still to this day consider him as a friend because he wasn't demanding. He didn't go ahead, "Are you sure this? Are you sure that?" From time to time, when we'd hit upon a subject, he'd want more detail on it, and sometimes that got to be frustrating, once again, being only about 8 years old at the time.
Since it's interesting that you had no problem qualifying for the U.S. Army, where you were immediately assigned to UFO issues, and as you have stated, you were later informed that the 4F designation was a mistake. I want you to explain that, if you could. Had you told this officer or your family about your childhood UFO experiences?
Are you referring to Captain Brown?
Yes.
Well, oh, yes. I went into great detail with Captain Brown as to my experiences. I'd like to point out something that when it comes to people actually having interfacing with the UFO entities, it's not something that can be taught in school. It's something, in short, from childhood, something happens. And I think our visitors are learning from the person are the persons whom they choose about our social interaction, how we think, how we feel, things of this sort. But I think it is a lifelong process. And for lack of a better term, from a very early age till the day you die, if you're chosen by them, there's some form of contact. It may be as you get a little older, it becomes less and less, but there's something there. But these are the people that they need in order to do the interfacing with our visitors. And
what?
They can't just go out and recruit them.
Why do you believe you were chosen, if you could use that word?
I have no idea. To this day, I still feel like I'd be the least likely candidate. I can't answer that question.
You mentioned having real, not imaginary, invisible friends as childhood friends, and that you had a particular visitor named Corona, with a K, not like the Mexican beer. Can you elaborate on these early experiences and whether anyone else in your family had these experiences as well?
My family caught glimpses of things. When I say my family, my cousins, Herbie Stevens, Larry Stevens, my mother, my aunt, Aunt Dahl, and my mother both observed some things. My Aunt Wynn, she was very much into spiritualism, and they sometimes would think that she was crazy, but I'd go ahead and I'd take offense to that, and I'd defend my aunt. And it wasn't because it was the spiritualism aspect. I didn't see it as that. I knew that there was something more, something much more to what I was experiencing. But at the same time, I'd be having certain problems, and they'd try to help me work through those problems. But they'd always tell me, no one else can see us. But there were times that others did. But it's a gradual process. The way I got to see Corona as he really looked was the day that I accidentally killed a little bird. I'd always see them as children, looking very much like any other children. But I was always cautioned by them, be careful what you say to us or even acknowledge us when you're around other people, because they can't see us. And when what happened was, on the day that I saw him as he really was, I found this little bird. It had fallen out of a tree, and when it fell, it broke its beak. Well, back in the day, if you cut your arm or you cut your wrist or any part of the body, what you do is go and hold it underwater to wash the germs off and all that.
Right.
So I hold the little bird underwater, not thinking I was going to drown it, and that's what happened. So I felt real, real bad. I mean, I cried for weeks over that. But Corona appeared and looked really, really, really taken back. And, you know, he couldn't understand what he was going through, and he wanted to know, why do you feel the way you feel? And, of course, immediately sorrow, any other emotion I had, immediately turned to fear, because this wasn't like the little children I'd seen before. Anyhow, he wanted to know why I felt the way, because whatever I was feeling, he too could feel. And
did you see him, or was this just on a thought, if you will?
No. I mean, he was as real as you and I.
Can you describe him?
About 4.5 to 5 foot tall, greenish tint. And this is going to sound crazy, but kind of like the grays, only where the, if you have the teardrop, you have the point of the teardrop pointing inward as opposed to outward. He had two little slits for a nose, had a mouth. But here's the situation. You could pick up on facial expressions on him. Not just like the way they report the grays is, you know, not having any expression at all.
No emotions.
Right, but he had emotions. And the one thing that I think he was picking up emotions from me, I'm pretty sure of that.
Did he just materialize or did he just walk in?
Well, he could materialize like popping on a light. Matter of fact, I used to refer to it as popping in, popping out.
How old were you when you first discovered your invisible friend sent Corona?
Probably about 6 years of age.
And this is before you met the Army captain, right?
Oh, yes. It wasn't until I had the daylight UFO experience, which I came to realize that there was something else out there. Excuse me. But it wasn't until that time that the captain approached me.
Do you still see these entities? Do they still visit you?
Oh, from time to time, I still get visitations.
So do you have current communication with them?
Yeah, but it's at their choosing. It's not at my choosing. A lot of people ask, how can we learn to communicate with them?
I've heard it's a process.
They choose you. Then it's a learning experience for both them and you.
When was the last time you would say you had a visitation or communication with them?
Well, I'd say several weeks ago.
And can you share what transpired?
Oh, we were just hitting up on some of the stuff that I was going over. Okay, I'm going to sound really, 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 really crazy right here.
Nothing sounds crazy on this show, Sergeant Stone.
I have over 250 million documents, and that's not an accident. These deal with all kinds of various subjects, formerly classified documents of the U.S. government, all that good stuff. But all I have to do is scroll down those documents. I don't even have to read them, but immediately they pick up and absorb what's in those documents. Then it becomes a mass confusion because, like, when we're hitting up on advanced technologies, I'm not a scientifically trained person, yet I can pick up on them understanding we're almost there, but we're not quite there. It's like you're in a room with two or three other people who know what they're talking about, and you're an outsider just listening. And like I say, that sounds crazy. But I can guarantee you there are other people who are in the military that went through the same thing.
Is this something you had to learn, or is this something you were born with?
Well, I think it is something that you acquire as a result of that contact. And I'm not sure really how they go ahead and decide whom and whom not they're going to choose to make contact with. But I think the day is approaching that there will be open contact worldwide.
Have they told you how close we may be to full disclosure? Is that something that you discuss in your communication with them?
We discuss it, but the situation is they're not the evil entities that everybody thinks that they are. Now, even in the military, you're told not all contact will be of a friendly nature. So you do have rogue elements. But on the most part, they have grown spiritually with their technology. I don't know how to put that in the proper words and proper text, but if you don't grow spiritually with your technology, you ultimately will fall victim to that technology. If we don't grow spiritually with our technology, and if it don't happen very soon, we may find ourselves victims to our own technology.
And you don't have to find the specific words. When I had Dr. Mitchell, we discussed this in detail. He said that if a civilization grows technologically more than spiritually, we're bound to our own demise. And this has happened on our own planet. And obviously, if these visitors, let's call them visitors, are coming here, it's because they're probably evolving technologically and spiritually. Would you say that's correct?
Yes, sir. Forgive me if I don't want to get into it too awful much, but when my son died, I could sense a sense of loss and sense of hurt on their part because of what I was feeling. And
they had feelings toward you?
Oh, yes. That was the first time I ever asked them if they had religion, I think.
And by the way, I'm very sorry to hear that.
I think I never asked before because I've always had a deep-rooted belief in God. And I felt, you know, if I asked them, I was a little afraid of the answer that I would get. And how do you support your religious views if they tell you all know it's nothing more than just chemical reaction? I didn't think I would fare too good on that. And I thought, well, they just accept the fact that I have these beliefs. But after that, I asked, and they asked me, why did it take me so long? Because they knew I wanted to ask long before that. But that's when I found out that they always try to put it in terms I can understand.
So did you ask him? Did you ask him about God?
Oh.
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.